This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
It's time for Bookends. Kia ora, welcome to Bookends with Maureen Wright and Ruth Todd. Maureen, it's been a very sombre week in Christchurch and a very sad week.
Yeah, yeah.
And reading books really helps. Mm. And I'm sure people who've got a book beside them this week and have dipped into it even or just sat and read, it's helped me a lot.
Yes. And I must say there's been some wonderful writing by local writers that has popped up on the dreaded social media and in other places. You know, there's people have reflected on what it's meant to them personally, and this was a wonderful poem by Christchurch poet Gail Ingram that we must play at some stage. Yeah, it's a way of trying to make sense of something evil and senseless.
So I've decided to play today an interview I did a couple of weeks ago of a very inspirational young woman from Northland who has crossed the Mongolian desert in that race that hardly anybody manages to finish or survive often. And she's written so well, you feel you're riding with her.
And I'm going to be looking forward to something very, very inspiring, talking with Rachel King, the literary director of the Word Christchurch Festival, and there's an autumn season happening in May, and that I think will be quite something to put in your diary, some amazing writers coming.
I'm talking today with Chloe Phillips-Harris, who's written her autobiography, even though she's still very young, The Life of a Kiwi Adventurer, Equestrian and Endurance Rider. Welcome, Chloe.
Hi, it's good to be here.
Well, you're still so young, but you've packed so much into most of your life so far, and you've always shown a remarkable passion and thirst for knowledge, and especially when working with horses. What was it that started you off? Was it your mother?
I guess bits of it. I think growing up, you know, I heard mum's stories of horse riding. I was lucky that when we did go back to visit my grandparents in Texas, I got to ride. But I think for me, I was a kid of the outdoors. I loved being outdoors. Horses were just a way to kind of expand on that. And then I loved the riding and I loved the freedom that, you know, being on a pony gave me when they eventually stopped, you know, dumping me on the ground. Yeah, so I think there was a lot. It was the horses themselves, but also that outdoors and kind of freedom it gave.
You didn't have it easy, though, did you? You were living on a fairly rundown farm. You didn't have money to buy the best horses.
No, definitely not. I throughout my teenage years, you know, I got a series of fairly difficult ponies and horses, but I kind of learnt to deal with them, and I spent so many hours, you know, and really enjoyed the process of figuring out how to get the best out of these horses and kind of turn them into the horses that I wanted so I could go out and compete. I loved the experience, but definitely a fair few challenges, a fair few injuries along the way.
So your mental attitude seemed very positive right from the start of your adventures, and how important did you feel that was compared with your physical abilities?
I think mental fortitude is huge. I know for me it probably got me through lots more than, you know, always being physically able did. And having seen other people go through different adventures and different challenges as well, I think, yes, you have to train for whatever you're going to do, and yes, you want to put as much physical fitness into anything to be prepared, but at the end of the day, your mental attitude is probably what's going to get you over the line. So I think just slowly kind of building up resistance from, you know, getting bucked off the smallest ponies and kind of having setbacks along the way through childhood and through teenage years probably actually at the end of the day helped me a lot.
So when you travelled, let's talk about your travels in Egypt and India first to save the neglected working animals there. How did you get to go there?
I truly, I just always wanted to give back you know, I'd gotten so much out of the horse world. I was competing, I was doing so much with horses. And I also knew that here in New Zealand, you know, we're so lucky to have them, and we have them for pleasure. They're not a form of survival here. And I really just kind of wanted to find a way to give back to an animal that's helped me. And I think I was looking just to do something different in my life. And at the time, I saw that there was a New Zealand woman leading a trip to Egypt, and she was going to go and help with the working animals on the streets in Cairo. And, I mean, the photos were horrendous. You know, there were these horses with skin and bone, with horrendous wounds, injuries, starving, everything. And I just kind of looked at it and thought I might be able to do something. And so I got in touch with her and said, please, will you take me along? And I'm so lucky she did. And kind of the rest after that was history.
Did you do you worked with the Kaimanawas too, the stallions. Those have been one of your loves, haven't they?
Yes, I absolutely love the Kaimanawas. And I think they were, you know, I started working with them before I started doing trips overseas. And I kind of thought, well, if I can work with wild horses, then, you know, surely some of those skills can transfer into working with, you know, slightly feral working animals on the streets in Egypt and India and various other places.
So Red was a favourite.
Yes. Red was one of my absolute favourite horses ever. Not because he was easy, but just we were a great team and worked really hard together. And probably were slightly the underdog when it came down to it. But yeah,
it was during your first job that you had really bad concussion.
Actually, it was when I was in high school.
Oh, is that way back in high school days?
Way back in high school.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, as soon as I got this horse called Red, I think it was in kind of the first few weeks or months of having him, I ended up fracturing my skull, kind of just one of those teenage mistakes more than anything he did too particularly wrong. But yeah, I had a good skull fracture at the start of our time together. But... recovered from that, ended up having many good years with him before we won the New Zealand Young Rider Series, and then he now lives in Australia.
Miss him? Do you miss him?
I do. I think he was the horse out of any that I have absolutely, you know, it broke my heart when he left. I missed him. I still miss him all the time and still think of him. But I also know I'd made the right decision for him, and him going to Australia and selling allowed me to, you know, kind of follow other dreams that I had. So I think he got the best life out of it and allowed me to go and do things that I loved. So, yeah.
Combining your work, you're alone a lot, you're competing in events, and you're, it's hard work working with the horses, getting them up to scratch. And you're a bit of a perfectionist, I imagine.
I never stop pushing. I'm just always curious to see what more you can do, I think. Whether you can train that horse that little bit better, go to a higher level, get better results, or, you know, go to different places and push there. I'm always curious to see how much more you can do, I guess.
It must sometimes be quite lonely. You're working alone a lot of the time, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Well, especially in the early days, I think, and I talk about that a lot in my book, you know, a lot of it was just me. Excuse me. These days I'm lucky that, you know, I've got girls that work with me or with the horses, which makes life so much easier. But, I mean, for 10 years, you know, from when I finished high school kind of till now, it was basically me on my own the whole time. It did. It was super, you know, those early years especially were lonely and were definitely challenging. But, again, I think I picked up skills from that has helped me today. And
You seem so positive. Yeah. I mean, when you're alone and lonely, it's not always lonely when you're alone, but when you are lonely, you seem to work it through and, you know, carry on. You just find something else to do. Is that what keeps you going?
You've got no one else to blame and no one else to kind of fix it for you. So you kind of just get on with getting the job done or, you know, whatever you need to do. So I think, I think I was just determined in that way to not let it be a barrier.
Your autobiography, it seems too young to write an autobiography, but you've packed so much in, as I said earlier. But Fearless is the perfect title because you are, if anybody is fearless who I've read about, you certainly are in absolute bucketfuls of fearlessness. So I suppose the highlight of this book, you lead up to it very well through your experiences and you finally have saved enough money, or you find the money to go and do the Mongolian derby.
Yeah.
Is it derby or derby?
Oh, it can be either way.
Oh, right.
Some people call it the Mongol derby. Sometimes it's the Mongol derby. Really.
Okay.
Whatever you want to call it, fine.
1,000 kilometres. It's an endurance race, and it's competitive because you want to win it as well. And most people, well, over half sometimes, don't ever get there, or I don't know if there are many deaths, but I imagine there are some very bad accidents or illnesses. And you had...
Yeah, I mean...
Yes.
50% usually don't make it to the finish line. And it's an incredible challenge in so many different ways. I mean, physically, it's pretty grueling because you've got all the extremes of temperature.
Take us through that. Take us how you, from the start to the finish, because you did finish.
So this was back in 2013. I had seen it a few years before and just thought, wow, this race is something I want to do in my life. You know, the second I heard about it, I was like, I want to be there. But it's the world's longest and toughest horse race. It's 1,000 kilometres across Mongolia. It's unsupported, so you get 5 kgs that you can carry with you, and that's it for the entire 1,000 kilometres. And it's on a string of Mongolian horses, so you change horses every 40 kilometres. They get vet checked every 40 kilometres before you can pick your next horse and keep riding, so it's pretty non-stop.
Do you know, have no choice of the horse that you're going to choose? I mean, are they lined up ready for you to pick the next one?
Yeah, so usually you'll ride into where the horse stations are, where they do the vet checks, and there'll be a picket line with some horses on. You know, there might not always be a huge selection on there. But I think the first thing that struck me is I thought I knew a lot about horses, and I got there and realised that I knew nothing about Mongolian horses, to be quite truthful about it. I mean, they're so different to ours. They're pretty wild still. The training is different. They're not used to seeing Westerners before, so they think we're strange as well. And really, I mean, so often during that race, I kind of just went, well, that one looks good for no particular reason, and picked it, chucked the saddle on, threw my leg in the saddle, and tried to get it kind of galloping or bolting in slightly the correct direction that I wanted to go. And, you know, went in and calmed down. I'd try and get a little bit more control over it and kind of fine-tune the direction we were going in. But, yeah, I mean, it took me 7.5 days to ride it, and it was just every challenge under the sun, more than I could ever imagine. And
I'm not going
and
to...
the horses were...
Yes, I'm not, I don't want to go into the detail of things that happened, because that's worth buying the book just for that for that part, which is the second half of the book, really.
Yeah.
I just want to ask you before I finish, I believe camels are one of your interests now, and are you looking to working more with other animals, reindeer, camels, horses in the future?
Oh, I'd love to. I think absolutely. Horses were the gateway here in New Zealand, but I'm so passionate about any animals, really. I mean, I love the outdoors. I love wildlife. I love animals. So absolutely, I want to do more with camels. I mean, I've done a bit with them now, and I love them. I think they're incredibly underrated as working animals and riding animals. And, I'd love to. I've got my own one in Mongolia I got given in January this year, so I'd love to get back and see him and do a bit more work with him, and also some in Australia. But I hope I can get around to training some wild camels over there.
You're an inspiration, Chloe, and
thank you
for writing Fearless and telling us all about your adventures, your equestrian work and your endurance riding, because it shows your determination, your inspiration and your absolute focus on doing better and better with the horses. And so thank you. It's published by HarperCollins. Thanks, Chloe.
Thanks so much. Pleasure talking to you.
Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Bookends on Plains FM 96.9.
Rachel King is the literary director of the Word Festival, and she's bringing good news, good tidings in this very sad time of something to look forward to, something to bring us some light and some humour and some provocative ideas, challenging ideas. Happening in May, 8th of May until the 25th. So let's just cut all this and get to the nitty gritty of what's happening.
All right. Hello, Maureen. Thank you for having me. yes, we have the Word Christchurch Autumn Season, which runs from the 8th to the 25th of May. And it's just something to tide our fantastic loyal audience over until the 2020 festival. So this year we'll be running a couple of different seasons and lots of one-off events. So this is the first of our big ones. It's been held in association with the Auckland Writers Festival and the Dunedin Writers Festival, which has enabled us to have access to some amazing international talent. So we're really excited about who we've got coming. So do you want me to just...
Yeah, well, I guess there's... Yeah, I'm overwhelmed with joy at seeing who's coming. So let's start from the beginning.
Start from the beginning. So yeah. First on the 8th of May, we've got Clementine Ford, who is the fearless feminist from Australia. Now, we had Clementine back in 2017 and we sold out her event and we put on another event and that one sold out immediately as well. So we've got her in a much bigger venue this time and she's promoting her book Boys Will Be Boys, which is about raising boys in a culture of toxic masculinity and what we can do about it, really. And I mean, her argument is that the patriarchy hurts boys and men as much as it does girls and women. So It's not anti-men, as some people have accused her of being, quite the opposite. And then on Sunday, the 12th of May, we've got a whole afternoon and evening at Papa Ho, which is at the YMCA.
So it's a new venue for us.
It is.
Really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Although I think, did you use it in last year's?
No,
it's a new venue.
It. Yep. So first up at 2 o'clock, we've got a BAFTA award-winning hip-hop artist, called Akala, who is also the founder of the Hip Hop Shakespeare Company. And he's going to be giving a talk about the parallels between modern hip hop and iambic pentameter of Shakespeare. and he's talking about the social, cultural and linguistic parallels between the works of Shakespeare and hip hop. So that's going to be a really fun session. A really good one for young people, if you know young people who like Shakespeare or hip hop. Bring them along. We're also encouraging drama teachers to see if they can gather some students together on the Sunday and bring them along. So we've got student prices for that one as well. And then at 4 o'clock, we've got at Papa Ho, we've got Luke Wright, who's a very witty and I'd say flamboyant. He calls himself a fop. Or a dandy. No, he calls himself a dandy, not a fop.
Oh, a dandy. Yes. We need a dandy. Yeah.
he's a performance poet. He's performed many times at places like the Edinburgh Fringe, won lots of awards. Paddy Smith is a fan. John Cooper Clarke is a fan. He often is has support when he tours in the UK. He does poetry about politics a lot, but, you know, with a lot of humour.
Well, I have lots to say about Brexit by then, won't he?
He does, yes. He has a lot of poetry about that, I believe. So that'll be a really fun and thought-provoking one as well. And then coming up at 6 o'clock on that day, on the 12th of May, we've got Akala is coming back to talk about his book, Natives, Race and Class and the Ruins of Empire. Now, I actually just put this on Twitter just now, that I think this is probably the most important event that we've got in the autumn season, especially considering what's been going on at the moment in Christchurch.
So pertinent. What a wonderful coincidence.
Yes.
That he's coming.
And Akala has just recently been all over the UK media because he's been a commentator about the rise of knife crime in among black communities. And his argument is that it's not... the violence is not inherent to black people, as a lot of people have been saying, but it's inherent in for children and adults who have grown up in poverty. So he's very articulate and really, really interesting. And then on Monday, the 13th of May, at the piano, we've got John Boyne, who was the author of The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas and The Heart's Invisible Furies. And his latest book is called A Ladder to the Sky. And he's also got a young adult novel called My Brother's Name is Jessica. So A Ladder to the Sky is kind of a, what would you call it, a satire? It's a deliciously dark literary kind of thriller, I suppose.
We all need one of those or more of those.
Yeah.
John, this delightful person, I remember when he came in 2012, I think it was.
Yeah. So we're really happy to have him back. And then straight after John at 8 p.m. on the same night, Monday the 13th of May, we've got Marcus Zusak, who is the author of course, The Book Thief, which came out quite some time ago. This is a long-awaited return for him. And he has a new book called The Bridge of Clay, and he'll be in conversation. So both of them will be in conversation with a chance to meet them afterwards and have books signed. And then on Wednesday, the 22nd of May, we've got quite a treat. We've got there's a podcast that comes out of the UK called The Illusionist.
I'm looking forward to this.
As an illusionist with an A. It's the person who runs it is called Helen Zaltzman. And it's all about language, the podcast. She explores language in a really kind of zany, sort of funny kind of way. She's got quite a few fans here, actually. And so that's basically the Illusionist podcast live, and that's at the Merivale Lane Theatre, which is at Rangiruru Girls' School. And then on Friday, the 24th of May, we've got Graham Simsion, who is the author of The Rosie Project.
That is a very popular book, isn't it?
It is, yes. Mm. And I've seen him in person before, and he's very engaging and very funny, so full of energy, and it'll be a really fun event with him. So he's got his latest one has come out is the third book in the Rosie trilogy. It's called The Rosie Result. So that'll be a great one. And then finally, on Saturday, the 25th of May, at the Philip Carter Family Auditorium at the Christchurch Art Gallery, we've got Shane Carter, who, of course, was the front man for Straitjacket Fits and Dimmer. He's written an amazing memoir, not just about his time in music, but also his childhood and growing up. And I'm reading it at the moment. I'm really blown away by the writing. It's insightful. It's often poetic. It's very funny. Really sad. The title of the book is Dead People I've Known, and so he talks quite a bit about loss in there as well. But there's also a lot of rock and roll in there, and it's really fantastic. So I'm actually going to be Shane and I used to play music together right back when I was a teenager. I supported the Straitjacket Fits when I was 16 in my first band. So I'm looking forward to reminiscing about that.
Well, you will have an insight totally into that part of his life.
Yeah. So that's 9 events altogether.
Is he going to play any music during
no,
that
No, he
time?
Won't be.
No,
it would be too stressful for him if he had to do both, I think. So
yes.
Just having a conversation. But now I just want to point out that we've got 9 events, various prices and concessions. But also, if you buy an autumn season pass, it's only $120 for all 9 sessions. So that works out to $13.33 a session.
That is very doable for people,
but there are
limited
numbers of those. So get in quick if you would like an autumn season pass.
Rachel, you've done a fantastic job of gathering up these people, such a variety, and you know, something that young people are going to enjoy as well as older people. I think, you know, without banding about old cliches, there's something for everyone.
there is something for everyone, I hope, yes.
Exactly. So tickets are available from Dash Tickets.
From Dash, but the best thing to do is go through our website.
Yes.
Because that way you can find the links to all the pass and to the thing, you know, have the full information.
Well, I was just thinking, I'm sure on the website, if people haven't heard, haven't listened to The Illusionist, there's sure to be a link to her podcast.
Well, there will be. Now that you've mentioned it, I will put one on there.
Yes, I was just thinking for myself, I need to go and get myself up to speed on her. And I presume Carla will have YouTubes and all sorts his various, as will Luke Wright, I'm sure.
Yes. But it'll be nothing like seeing them in person.
No, exactly. Mm. No, you must come and do that. So wordchristchurch.co.nz for all that. Get your tickets quickly because I gather that even though it's just been announced, that tickets are going quick.
They are going swiftly. Yes, they're going very quickly. Don't dilly-dally is my advice.
Good. Another old cliche just to finish. So again, thank you, Rachel. Rachel King, the literary director of Word Christchurch. The autumn season, 8th till the 25th of May, something to look forward to.
Thanks, thank you, Maren.
And join us, Maren Rout and Ruth Todd, next Tuesday on Bookends on Plains FM 96.9.